Chapter 6. Inside the Ship. 1.
You ready, Guard?
Gardner was sitting on the front porch, looking out at Route 9. The voice came from behind him, and it was easy, too easy, for him not to flash on 100 sleazy prison movies where the warden arrives to escort the condemned man along the last mile. Such scenes always beginning, of course, with the warden growling, "Are you ready, Rocky?"
Ready for this? You got to be kidding.
He got up, turned around, saw the equipment in Bobby's arms, then the little smile on Bobby's face. There was something knowing in that smile that he didn't like.
"See something funny?"
he asked.
"Heard it. Heard you, Guard. You were thinking about old prison movies," Bobby said. "And then you thought, ready for this, you've got to be kidding.
I caught all of that one, and that's very rare, unless you're deliberately sending. That's why I was smiling."
"You are peeking."
"Yes, and it's getting easier to do," Bobby said, still smiling. From behind his decaying mental shield, Gardner thought,
"I have a gun now, Bobby. It's under my bed. I got it in the First Reformed Church of the Tommyknockers."
It was dangerous. But it would be more dangerous not to know just how deep Bobby's ability to peek now went. Bobby's smile faltered a little.
"What was that one?"
she asked.
"You tell me,"
he said. And when her smile began to change to a look of narrow suspicion, he added easily,
"Come on, Bobby. I was just pulling your string a little. I was only wondering what you got there."
Bobby brought the equipment over. There were two rubber snorkel mouthpieces attached to tanks and homemade regulators.
"We wear these," she said, "when we go inside."
Inside.
Just the word lit a hot spark in his belly and triggered all sorts of conflicting emotions. Awe, terror, anticipation, curiosity, tension. Part of him felt like a superstitious native preparing to walk on taboo ground. The rest felt like a kid on Christmas morning.
"The air inside is different, then,"
Gardner said.
"Not so different."
Bobby had put her makeup on indifferently this morning, perhaps having decided there was no longer any need to hide the accelerating physical changes from Gardner. Guard realized he could see Bobby's tongue moving inside her head as she spoke, only it didn't look precisely like a tongue anymore. And the pupils of Bobby's eyes looked bigger, but somehow uneven and wavering, as if they were peering up at him from underwater. Water with a slight greenish tinge. He felt his stomach turn over.
"Not so different," she said. "Just rotten."
"Rotten?"
"The ship's been sealed for over 25,000 centuries," Bobby said patiently. "Totally sealed. We'd be killed by the outrush of bad air as soon as we opened the hatch, so we wear these."
"What's in them?"
"Nothing but good old Haven air. The tanks are small, 40, maybe 50 minutes of air. You clip it to your belt, like this, see?"
"Yes."
Bobby offered him one of the rigs. Guard attached the tank to his belt. He had to raise his T-shirt to do it, and he was very glad he'd decided to leave the 45 under the bed for now. "Start using the canned air just before I open it up," Bobby said. "Almost forgot. Here, just in case you forget." She handed Gardner a pair of nose plugs. Guard stuffed them into a jeans pocket. "Well," Bobby said briskly, "are you ready then?"
"We're really going in there."
"We really are," Bobby said almost tenderly. Gardner laughed shakily. His hands and feet were cold.
"I'm pretty fucking excited," he said.
Bobby smiled. "I am, too."
"Also, I'm scared."
In that same tender voice, Bobby said,
"No need to be, Guard. Everything will be all right."
Something in that tone made Gardner feel more scared than ever. 2. They took the Tomcat and cruised silently through dead woods, the only sound the minute hum of batteries. Neither of them talked. Bobby parked the Tomcat by the lean-to, and they stood for a moment looking at the silver dish rising out of the trench. The morning sun shone on it in a pure, widening wedge of light.
"Inside," Gardner thought again. Are you ready? Bobby asked again.
Come on, Rocky, just one big jolt. You'll never feel a thing.
Yeah. Fine.
Gardner said. His voice was a trifle hoarse. Bobby was looking at him inscrutably with her changing eyes, those floating, widening pupils. Gardner seemed to feel mental fingers fluttering over his thoughts, trying to pull them open.
Going in there could kill you, you know,
Bobby said at last. Not the air, we've got that licked. She smiled.
It's funny, you know. 5 minutes on one of those mouthpieces would knock someone from the outside unconscious, and half an hour of it would kill him. But it'll keep us alive.
Does that tickle you, Guard?
Yes,
Guard said, looking at the ship and wondering the things he always wondered.
Where did you come from? And how long did you have to cruise the night to get here?
It tickles me. I think you'll be okay, but you know, Bobby shrugged. Your head, that steel plate, interacts somehow with the...
I know the risk.
As long as you do. Bobby turned and walked toward the trench. Gardner stood where he was for a moment, watching her go.
I know the risk from the plate. What I'm less clear on is the risk from you, Bobby. Is it haven air I'm going to get when I have to use that mask? Or something like raid?
But it didn't matter, did it? He had thrown the dice, and nothing was going to keep him from seeing inside that ship if he could. Not David Brown. Not the whole world. Bobby reached the trench. She turned and looked back, her made-up face a dull mask in the morning light angling through the old pines and spruces which surrounded this place. Coming?
Yeah,
Gardner said and walked over to the ship. 3. Getting down proved to be unexpectedly tricky. Ironically, getting up was the easy part. The button at the bottom was right there, in fact no more than the 0 on a remote telephone handset. At the top, the button was a conventional electrical switch set on one of the posts which supported the lean-to. This was 50 feet from the edge of the trench. For the first time, Gardner realized how all those car recalls could happen. Until now, neither of them had bothered with the fact that their arms were somewhat less than 50 feet long. They had been using the sling to go up and down for a long time now, long enough to take it for granted. Standing at the edge of the trench, they realized that they had never both gone down together. What both also realized, but neither said, was that they could have gone down one at a time. With someone to run the buttons at the bottom, all would have been well. Neither said it because it was understood between them that this time, and only this time, they must go down together. Perfectly together, both with 1 foot in the single stirrup, arms around each other's waists, like lovers in a descending swing. It was stupid. Just stupid. Just stupid enough to be the only right way. They looked at each other without saying a word, but 2 thoughts flew and crossed in the air.
Here we are, a couple of college graduates.
Bobby, where'd I leave my left-handed monkey wrench?
Bobby's strange new mouth quivered. She turned around and snorted. Guard felt a moment of the old warmth touch his heart then. It was the last time he really ever saw the old and unimproved Bobby Anderson.
Well, can you rig a portable unit to run the sling?
I can, but it's not worth taking the time. I've got another idea. Her eyes touched Gardner's face for a moment, thoughtful and calculating. It was a look Gardner could not quite interpret. Then Bobby walked away to the lean-to. Gardner followed her part way and saw Bobby swing open a large green metal box that had been mounted on a pole. She pawed through the tools and general junk inside and then came back with a transistor radio. It was smaller than the ones his helpers had turned into new and improved satchel charges while Bobby was recuperating. Guard had never seen this particular radio before. It was very small.
One of them brought it out last night,
he thought. Bobby pulled up its stubby antenna, inserted a jack in its plastic case and the plug in her ear. Guard was instantly reminded of Freeman Moss moving the pumping equipment like an elephant trainer moving the big guys around the center ring.
This won't take long.
Bobby pointed the antenna back toward the farm. Gardner seemed to hear a heavy, powerful hum, not on the air, but inside the air somehow. For just a moment his mind muttered with music, and there was a headachy pain in the middle of his forehead, as if he had drunk too much cold water too fast.
Now what?
We wait, Bobby said and repeated. It won't take long.
Her speculative gaze passed over Gardner's face again, and this time Gardner thought he understood that look.
It's something she wants me to see, and this chance came up to show me.
He sat down near the trench and discovered a very old pack of cigarettes in his breast pocket. Two were left. One was broken, the other bent, but whole. He lit it and smoked reflectively, not really sorry about this delay. It gave him a chance to go over his plans again. Of course, if he dropped dead as soon as he went through that round hatch, it would put something of a crimp in those plans.
Ah, here we go, Bobby said, getting up.
Guard also got up. He looked around, but at first saw nothing.
Over there, Guard. The path.
Bobby spoke with the pride of a kid showing off her first soapbox racer. Gardner finally saw it and began to laugh. He didn't really want to laugh, but he couldn't help it. He kept thinking he was getting used to the brave new world of Haven's jury-rigged super-science, and then some odd new combination would tumble him right back down the rabbit hole. Like now. Bobby was smiling, but faintly. Vaguely, as if Gardner's laughter meant nothing one way or the other.
It does look a little strange, but it will do the trick. Take my word for it.
It was the Electrolux he had seen in the shed. It was not running on the ground, but just above it, its little white wheels turning. Its shadow ran placidly off to one side, like a dachshund on a leash. From the back, where the vacuum hose attachments would have gone in a sane world, two filament-thin wires protruded in a V-shape.
Its antenna,
Gardner thought.
Now it landed, if you could call a touchdown from 3 inches a landing, and trundled over the beaten earth of the excavation area to the lean-to, leaving narrow tracks behind it. It stopped below the switchbox which controlled the sling.
Watch this,
Bobby said in that same pleased, showing-off-my-soapbox-racer voice. There was a click, a hum. Now a thin black rope began to rise out of the vacuum cleaner's side, like a rope rising out of a wicker basket in the Indian rope trick. Only it wasn't a rope, Gardner saw. It was a length of coaxial cable. It rose in the air, up, up, up. It touched the side of the switchbox and slid around to the front. Gardner felt a crawl of revulsion. It was like watching something like a bat. A blind thing which had some sort of radar. A blind thing that could seek. The end of the cable found the buttons. The black one which started the sling going down or up. The red one which stopped it. The end of the cable touched the black one and suddenly went rigid. The black button popped neatly in. The motor behind the lean-to started up and the sling started to slip into the trench. The tension went out of the cable. It slipped down to the red stop button. Stiffened, pushed it. When the motor had died, leaning over, Gardner could see the sling dangling against the side of the cut about 12 feet down, the cable rose and pushed the black button again. The motor started once more. The sling came back up. When it reached the top of the trench, the motor died automatically. Bobby turned to him. She was smiling, but her eyes were watchful.
There, she said. Works fine.
It's incredible, Gardner said. His eyes had moved steadily back and forth between Bobby and the Electrolux as the cable ran the buttons. Bobby had not been gesturing with the radio as Freeman Moss had with his walkie-talkie, but Gardner had seen the little frown of concentration and the way her eyes had dropped just an instant before the coaxial cable slipped down from the black button to the red one.
It looks like a mechanical dachshund. Something out of one of those terminally cute Kelly Freeze SF paintings. That's what it looks like, but it's not a robot. Not really, it has no brain. Bobby's its brain. And she wants me to know it.
And there had been a lot of those customized appliances in the shed, lined up against the wall.
The one his mind kept trying to fix on was the washing machine with a boomerang antenna mounted on it.
The Shen.
That raised a hell of an interesting question. Guard opened his mouth to ask it, then closed it again, trying at the same time to thicken the shield over his thoughts as much as he could. He felt like a man who has nearly strolled over the lip of a chasm 1,000 feet deep while looking at the pretty sunset.
No one back home, at least that I know of, and the shed's padlocked on the outside, so just how did Fido the vacuum cleaner get out?
He had really been only an instant from asking that question, when he realized Bobby hadn't mentioned where the Electrolux had come from. Guard could suddenly smell his own sweat, sour and evil. He looked at Bobby and saw Bobby looking at him with that small, irritated smile that meant she knew Gardner was thinking. But not what.
Where did that thing come from, anyway?
Gardner asked. Oh, it was around. Bobby waved her hand vaguely. The important thing is that it works. So much for the unexpected delay. Want to get going?
Fine. I just hope that thing's batteries don't go flat while we're down there.
I'm its battery, she said. As long as I'm all right, you'll get up again, Guard, okay?
Your insurance policy. Yes. I think I get it.
Okay, he said. They went to the trench. Bobby rode the sling down first, while the cable rising from the side of the Electrolux ran the buttons. The sling came back up, and Gardner stepped into it, holding the rope as it began to go down again. He took a final look at the battered old Electrolux and thought again,
how the hell did it get out?
Then he was sliding into the dimness of the trench, and the dank mineral smell of wet rocks, the smooth surface of the ship rising up and up on his left, like the side of a skyscraper without windows. 4. Guard stepped off the sling. He and Bobby stood shoulder to shoulder in front of the circular groove of the hatch, which had the shape of a large porthole. Gardner found it almost impossible to take his eyes from the symbol etched upon it. He found himself remembering something from earliest childhood. There had been an outbreak of diphtheria in the Portland suburb where he'd been raised. 2 kids had died, and the public health office had imposed a quarantine. He remembered walking to the library, his hand safely caught up in his mother's, and passing houses where signs had been stapled to the front doors, the same word in heavy black letters heading each. He asked her what it meant, and she said it meant there was sickness in the house. It was a good word, she said, because it warned people not to go in. If they did, she said, they might catch the disease and spread it. Are you ready? Bobby asked, breaking in on his thoughts.
What does that mean?
He pointed at the symbol on the hatch. Burmashave. Bobby was unsmiling. Are you?
No. But I guess I'm as close as I'll ever get.
He looked at the tank clipped to his belt, and wondered again if he was going to draw some poison that would explode his lungs at the first breath. He didn't think so. This was supposed to be his reward. 1 visit inside the holy temple before he was erased, once and for all, from the equation. All right, Bobby said. I'm going to open it.
You're going to think it open,
Gardner said, looking at the plug in Bobby's ear. Yes, Bobby replied dismissively, as if to say what else. It's going to iris open. There'll be an explosive outrush of bad air, and when I say bad, I mean really bad. How are your hands?
What do you mean?
Cuts?
Nothing that isn't scabbed over.
He held his hands out like a little boy submitting to his mother's pre-dinner inspection. Okay. Bobby took a pair of cotton work gloves from her back pocket and drew them on. To Guard's inquiring look, she said, "Hangnails on 2 fingers. It might not be enough, but it might. When you see the hatch start to iris open, Guard, close your eyes. Breathe from the tank. If you whiff on what comes out of the ship, it's going to kill you as quick as a Drano cocktail."
Gardner said, "am convinced."
He slipped the snorkel mouthpiece into his mouth and used the nose plugs. Bobby did the same. Gardner could hear, feel his pulse in his temples moving very fast, like someone tapping rapidly on a muffled drum with 1 finger.
This is it. This is finally it.
Ready? Bobby asked one last time. Muffled by the mouthpiece, it came out sounding like Elmer Fudd. Ready? Gardner nodded.
Remember? Remember?
Gardner nodded again.
For Christ's sake, Bobby, let's go.
Bobby nodded.
Okay. Be ready.
Before he could ask her for what, that symbol suddenly broke apart in curves, and Gardner realized with a deep, almost sickening excitement that the hatch was opening. There was a high, thin, screaming sound, as if something rusted shut for a long time was now moving again, but with great reluctance. He saw Bobby turn the valve on the tank clipped to her belt. He did the same, then closed his eyes. A moment later, a soft wind pushed against his face, shoving his shaggy hair back from his brow. Gardner thought,
death. That's death. Death rushing past me, filling this trench like chlorine gas. Every microbe on my skin is dying right now.
His heart was pounding much too fast, and he had actually begun to wonder if the outrush of gas,
like the rush of gas out of a coffin,
his skittish mind chattered, wasn't killing him somehow after all, when he realized he had been holding his breath. He pulled a breath in through the mouthpiece. He waited to see if it would kill him. It didn't. It had a dry, stale taste, but it was perfectly breathable.
40, maybe 15 minutes of air. Slow down, guard. Take it slow. Make it last. No panting.
He slowed down. Tried, at least. Then that high screaming noise quit. The outrush of air grew softer against his face, then stopped entirely. Then Gardner spent an eternity in the dark, facing the open hatch with his eyes shut. The only sounds were the muffled drum of his heart and the sigh of air through the tank's demand regulator. His mouth already tasted of rubber, and his teeth were locked much too hard on the rubber pins inside the snorkel mouthpiece. He forced himself to get cool and ease up. At last, eternity ended. Bobby's clear thought filled his mind.
Okay. Should be okay. You can open those baby blues, guard.
Like a kid at a surprise party, Jim Gardner did just that. 5. He was looking along a corridor. It was perfectly round except for a flat ledge of walkway halfway up one side. The position looked all wrong. For a wild moment he visualized the Tommyknockers as grisly, intelligent flies crawling along that walkway with sticky feet. Then logic reasserted itself. The walkway was canted. Everything was canted because the ship was at an angle. Soft light glowed out of the round, featureless walls.
No dead batteries here,
Gardner thought.
These are really long life jobbies.
He looked into the corridor beyond the hatch with a deep and profound sense of wonder.
It is alive, even after all these years. Still alive. I'm going in, guard. Are you coming? Gonna try, Bobby.
She stepped in, ducking her head so as not to bump it on the upper curve of the hatch. Gardner hesitated a moment, biting down on the rubber pins inside the mask again, and followed. 6. There was a moment of transcendent agony. He felt, rather than heard, radio transmissions fill his head. Not just one. It was as if every radio broadcast in the world momentarily shrieked inside his brain. Then it was gone. Simply gone. He thought of the way that radio transmissions faded when you went into a tunnel. He had entered the ship, and all outside transmissions had been damped down to nothing. Nor was it only outside transmissions, he discovered a moment later. Bobby was looking at him, obviously sending a thought.
Are you all right?
Was Gardner's best guess. But a guess was all it was. But he could no longer hear Bobby in his head at all. Curious, he sent back,
I am fine, go on.
Bobby's questioning expression didn't change. She was much better at this than Gardner, but she wasn't getting anything either. Guard gestured for her to go on. After a moment, she nodded and did. 7. They walked 20 paces up the corridor. Bobby moved with no hesitation, nor did she hesitate when they came to a round interior hatch set into the surface of the flat walkway on their left. This hatch, about 3 feet in diameter, was open. Without looking back at Gardner, Bobby climbed into it. Gardner paused, looking back along the softly lit corridor. The hatchway to the outside was back there, a round porthole giving onto the darkness of the trench. Then he followed. There was a ladder bolted to the new corridor, which was almost small enough in diameter to be called a tunnel. Guard and Bobby did not need the ladder. The ship's position had rendered the corridor almost horizontal. They went on their hands and knees, with the ladder sometimes scraping their backs. The ladder made Gardner uneasy. The rungs were spaced almost 4 feet apart, that was one thing. A man, even a very long-legged one, would have had difficulty using it. The other thing about the rungs was more unsettling. A pronounced semicircular dip, almost a notch, in the center of each.
So the Tommyknockers had really bad fallen arches,
he thought, listening to the rasp of his own respiration.
Big deal, guard.
But the picture that came to him was not of flat feet or fallen arches. The picture which stole into his mind, softly, and yet with a simple, undeniable power, was of some not-quite-seen creature climbing that ladder. A creature with a single thick claw on each foot, a claw which fit neatly into each of those dips as it climbed. Suddenly the round, dimly lit walls seemed to be pressing in on him, and he had to grapple with a terrible bout of claustrophobia. The Tommyknockers were here, all right, and still alive. At any moment he might feel a thick, inhuman hand close about his ankle. Sweat ran into his eye, stinging. He whipped his head around, looking back over one shoulder.
Nothing. Nothing, guard. Get yourself under control.
But they were here. Perhaps dead, but somehow alive, just the same. In Bobby, for one thing, but...
But you have to see, guard. Now go.
He started crawling again. He was leaving faint, sweaty handprints on the metal he saw. Human handprints inside this thing which had come from God knew where. Bobby reached the mouth of the passage, turned on her stomach, and dropped out of sight. Guard followed, stopping at the mouth of the passageway to look out. Here was a large open space, hexagonal in shape, like a large chamber in a beehive. It was also canted at a crazy funhouse angle as a result of the crash. The walls glowed with soft, colorless light. A thick cable came out of a gasket on the floor. This split into half a dozen thinner cords, and each ended in a set of things which looked like headphones with bulging centers. Bobby wasn't looking at these. She was looking into the corner. Gardner followed her gaze and felt his stomach gain weight. His head swam dizzily. His heart faltered. They had been gathered around their telepathic steering wheel, or whatever the hell it was, when the ship hit. They had perhaps been trying to pull out of their dive to the very last, but it hadn't worked. And here they were, two or three of them at least, slung into a far corner. It was hard to tell what they looked like. They were too tangled together. The ship had hit, and they had been thrown to that end of this room. There they still lay.
Interstellar car crash,
Gardner thought sickly.
Is that all there is, Alfie?
Bobby did not go toward those brown husks piled in the lowest angle of this strange bare room. She only stared, her hands clenching and unclenching. Gardner tried to understand what she was thinking and feeling and could not. He turned and carefully lowered himself over the edge of the passageway. He joined her, walking carefully on the canted floor. Bobby looked at him with her strange new eyes.
What do I look like to her through those new eyes?
Guard wondered, and then back toward the tangled remains in the corner. Her hands continued to open and snap closed. Gardner started toward them. Bobby clutched at his arm. Gardner shook her grip off without even thinking. He had to look at them. He felt like a child drawn toward an open grave, full of fear but compelled to go on anyway. He had to see. Gardner, who had grown up in southern Maine, crossed what he believed to be, for all its darkness, the control room of an interstellar spacecraft.
The floor under his feet looked as smooth as glass, but his sneakers held their grip easily. He heard no sound but his own harsh breathing, smelled only dusty haven air. He walked down the slanted floor to the bodies and looked at them. End of side 15. To continue, turn the cassette over.